Welcome to Section 9, where we talk about IT and information security. I'm Damian Hull.
And I'm Dorothy.
And today we're going to be doing a mini security audit. And this is where we kind of go over some of the things we're doing in security and just sort of double checking and verifying. We want to know if these things are good for us or not. Now, let's remind ourselves of what we're trying to do here. So a couple episodes ago, I came up with a short list of things that we're going to try to do here at Section 9 to improve overall security. And on that list, I have patching, 2FA, application allow listing, and Sysmon for better Windows logging. Now, we're doing the first three. We're going to save Sysmon for a separate episode because there's a lot that goes on in that. So we're going to be looking at patching, 2FA, and application allow listing. Now, to give people a better understanding of what we're doing here at Section 9, I want to talk about our environment, because it's one thing to talk about security in a lab environment, but what does it look like when you drag it out of the lab or out of a book or a video and apply that to the real world? So we're tiny. There's just the two of us, but we have Microsoft 365. We're using Azure AD and Intune, and we have Windows 10 systems that are joined to Azure AD, and they're sort of partially managed out of Intune. Whenever we want to apply settings, we're going to be doing that through Intune. And this is an environment which can be applied to a business. So if we had, let's say, 100 employees, we could use this environment in that situation, and it would work perfectly. So I'm trying to create that scenario where instead of doing security in a lab, we're doing security in the real world, one that you can take with you and you can apply to a business environment, which you can do that because we're doing it. Now, let's go back to the short list here, and we're going to focus on how this applies to our overall security and whether or not this is working for us, right? Because that's the whole goal here. So before we jump into any of this, let's look at the goals we have for this particular project. I want to double check and verify, and then I want to see how does this work in terms of our overall security? How does this improve it? Is it worse? Is it better? Do we need to make some changes? Those kind of things. So I'm going to start off with 2FA because this is the easy one. It's not available everywhere. And we are currently using this with Microsoft 365 and LastPass. These are two services that are super important to us and they offer 2FA, so we're using that. This makes it harder for the attackers to get in. There are ways around two-factor authentication, but it's hard to do that. And so the attacker would have to guess our username and password and then figure out a way around two-factor authentication. And that's just hard to do. And I think most attackers will just give up and go away, which is what we want. So overall, I think the 2FA that we're using is perfect for us, works really well, and offers that extra layer of protection. So I think that that's a good thing. We're going to talk about application allow listing next. I did talk about this last episode, but I want to clarify some things here. The application allow listing that we're doing is directory-based, which means that in our app locker configuration, I'm specifying directories that are allowed to run applications. And for us, this works perfectly. There are more secure methods of implementing application allow listing, but they're much harder to manage. So if you're going to do like every single app and say, allow this, allow this, allow this, that would be more secure. However, you would have to allow every single app, including the new ones you install. When you do it by directory, you're catching a lot of apps all at once.
I have a question. So when, let's say you were doing app through app through app, is it on every workstation or would that apply to all the workstations when you take care of that app?
So when you, because all your, in a business environment like we are trying to be, all of the devices should have the exact same apps. Now, it depends because you're going to have departments, right? So HR is different from accounting because they're going to have different apps. So you have to go and then say, okay, HR has these apps, accounting has these other apps, and then you're going to have to allow...
On each department?
Correct.
Okay, but it wouldn't be that you would have to allow it on every workstation. You would allow it in groups, the way we're doing it?
Correct, because HR is going to have everything the same. Accounting is going to have everything the same. Admin is going to have everything the same. But if they do make changes to that, they install new apps, get rid of old ones... you got to change your application allow listing. So in our case, my laptop is different from yours because I'm kind of like in a different department. Since I edit the podcast, I have to have special apps to edit the podcast, which would then have to be allowed or added to that allow list for me, right? But by doing it by directory, I catch them all, right? There were a few issues I had when implementing application allow listing because I didn't allow for certain directories I didn't know about, things like Teams and some Microsoft apps. They didn't work because I didn't have the right directories allowed. But now that those are allowed, we should have most of them. I may have to go back and double check and verify that that's the case, but it's much easier to do by directory.
Aren't we in the same directory?
Well, we are, for the most part.
So how do you configure it to exclude me from the directory with podcast?
How does that work? So here's the thing you want to think about when we're doing application allow listing. Mm. When I specify a directory, it's the directory that runs the apps. So if you're talking about Windows 10,
okay,
then it's wherever the Windows 10 apps get installed, right? So most of them are going to be in specific locations. Then outside of that, you have one-offs. Things like I happen to have Spotify. Spotify wouldn't run because it was in a specific directory. But because we're pushing this out to both of our laptops, if you get Spotify, you can run that because it's applied to both our laptops.
Because you did it from the Spotify directory or the directory that runs Spotify.
Correct. And then we push all of this out through Intune and it applies equally to both of us. So you get the same configuration I have.
So then when you do the thing for the podcast, whatever directory runs the podcast, since I don't have that app in my laptop, then you get it and I don't.
No, you get it anyway because it's by directory and you get the same configuration that I have. There's no difference.
Okay.
Because we are deploying this across. Think of this if we had 1,000 laptops, right? I'm not going to have a different configuration for all 1,000. It's going to be the same unless we have different departments.
Okay, let me ask you this then. What if my department or maybe one of the apps my department doesn't need?
It doesn't matter. If we're doing it by directory, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Because it's by directory and most apps get installed in specific directories, it's all the same. I don't change.
So unless the app is installed, that's what excluded or includes it.
So what we're doing here is we're not including apps. So basically what we're doing is we're allowing apps. We're not denying apps. We're allowing apps.
Okay. This is, I guess, where the confusion is for me. So if I don't need that app on my laptop and I don't have it installed in my laptop, it's excluded, no?
No. It's not. We're not excluding. We're allowing.
Okay.
So I don't exclude Spotify. I allow Spotify.
Okay, so I allow Spotify, and if I have it in my laptop, it would run.
Correct.
But what if you don't want me to, and we'll use Spotify as an example.
Then I don't install it on your laptop.
Okay. That's where the exclusion is.
But don't think of it as exclusion.
I don't want to say deny.
Well, so this is how it works. You allow with a deny. So anything that's allowed in specific directories, run that. But outside of that, you deny. So that's where when the malware comes in, and this is important to understand, when the malware comes in, where is it most likely going to end up? The downloads folder. Is the downloads folder part of that allow list? No, it's not. So that's what you want to take into consideration. And is there a way around application allow listing? By directory? Yes, there is. Is it easy to do? No, it's not. So people who work in the industry and do things like pen testing for a living have said that application allow listing, even the way we're doing it, makes it really, really hard for them to get their malware in because
they would have to have their laptop tied into our network, configure the way that we have it, and have that specific application on it. And that is difficult to do if you don't
know. Well, no. So they're doing something way beyond what we can even think about.
Okay.
And what they're trying to do is get malware onto the system like a hacker would.
Mm-hmm.
They're pen testers, but they have to think like hackers to get in. So whatever it is they're doing, they do have methods to get around application allow listing, but it's really hard to do that. So that's all we need to say about that, because it's beyond anything that we can think about.
Right. So if you're a hacker and you're trying to look for an easy way in, when you run into things like that, you're going to move on to the next easy target.
Exactly. Okay. And so while there are more secure ways of doing application allow listing, it's really, really hard to manage all of that, because you have to specify all the apps or whatever the case may be. And you would have to dedicate somebody to that, especially if you're in a larger organization. Even if you had, let's say, 100 people, they may try to install, let's say, a printer driver. And the system says, no, you can't use that. You know, I'm using that as an example, because there's always times when somebody goes someplace with a laptop, they need to have something installed. Maybe somebody remotes into the system, does the installation. And oh, by the way, it's not working because you did application allow listing by application or whatever it is that prevents that from working. Whereas the way we did it, it's most likely that when you install the printer software, whatever that may be, it's just going to work because we do it by directory. And most apps end up in specific directories. Now, that's huge for us, because when you look at the things that we have done, patching, two-factor, and now application allow listing, the security that we're going to get from application allow listing is huge. We're not accidentally going to download something and have it execute because application allow listing is going to say, no, you don't get to run because you're in the downloads folder.
So when you do this through the directory, how many users is this feasible to do it? Like, what's the limit of users?
The directory thing has nothing to do with the number of users. It's just a configuration.
No, I know it's a configuration, but like, would you do this on an enterprise environment? Millions. Would you do it this way? Millions. Okay, so.
Because it has nothing to do with the number of users. Forget users. None of the security things that we're doing has anything to do with users. In this particular case, what it has to do with is, does the security work for us? How effective is it? And can we manage that? And so application allow listing by directory is super effective.
And what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, what would be the difference, you know, because you said that, you know, there are ways to do it to where it would be more secure. But if this is feasible and it's something that is going to work for an enterprise environment, regardless of the number of users, then I guess I don't understand why we wouldn't do it this way.
This is the way we are doing it.
No, not us, but I mean people that are trying to do it.
Because people don't understand this. And people, and I will say this, that in the past, I have been told by instructors in security courses to do it by kind of more like an application-based application list, right? And they used to call it whitelisting. You got 10 apps you want to use, whitelist the 10 apps. And there were different ways of doing that. But nobody would do that, because when you thought about how you were going to implement that, you realized real quickly, hey, this is hard to do. Because when you do it by application, this is something to think about. When you upgrade the app, as in you're supposed to be doing that in your patch management, you have to reallow the new app.
Every time?
Every single time. Because the new app is slightly different from the old app.
So it's the old one that has been allowed.
Correct.
Got it.
So it depends on how you do it. But one method that was supposed to be super secure just made it so difficult to manage that it was just not feasible. So the way we're doing it, and keep in mind, you have to think about, oh, I have 1,000 devices. The configuration gets pushed out to 1,000 devices. It's not one configuration for one laptop. It's one configuration for 1,000 laptops. All applied, equally done. Walk away, forget it. It doesn't matter how many users you have. It doesn't matter how many devices you have. It's the same exact configuration for all 1,000.
I guess what the right question for me to have asked was, what would be the difference between doing it per application versus directory? And that's what I was trying to ask in my own goofy way.
So doing it by application is more secure, but for most organizations, it sucks because the overhead, the management cost is too high. In some cases, you have organizations that dedicate people to nothing but application allow listing.
Yeah.
So again, we're doing directory-based. It prevents random downloads from executing on our system because they're going to go in the downloads folder. It's not allowed. And this is huge because now if I randomly click on the internet, most likely if there's a virus in there, I'm never going to get it, right? So that's awesome. And overall security for this one, I would say is really awesome. I got to go back and double check and verify that we didn't miss any applications, like there's any kind of errors in the log saying an application was denied, I need to fix those. Outside of that, this is awesome. Again, so that's two-factor and application anomalies thing. But now let's go ahead and talk about patching. And we're using AutoMox for this. It's a third-party application. It's cross-platform. Works really well for us. You could use Intune, and I will talk about that in a minute. But what we're going to focus on here is OS and application patching. And again, I should have mentioned this earlier, but we're focusing on our Windows systems because while we do have Linux, most of the attacks are going to happen on the Windows side, and most of it's going to happen on the workstation or laptop side of things. And so that's kind of our focus. So here, we're talking about OS and application patching on Windows 10 systems. On the OS side, we're awesome because we have AutoMox configured to patch our operating systems once a month. And that's awesome, right? Works really well. We don't have to think too much about it. We just double check and verify. Sometimes a machine needs to be rebooted, but that's about it. Now let's talk about applications. And for this one, we're not doing so good on third-party applications. However, it's not too bad. So with OS patching, when we do, we have a patch all policy in AutoMox that does the operating system. And I think it will get some of the Microsoft apps because they're integrated with Windows 10. When you do your Windows 10 updates, it's going to get your Office updates as well. So things like Teams, Word, Excel, all of that will get updated at the same time. So I'm not worried about that. And then AutoMox has the ability of patching some third-party applications, not all. So we have PuTTY installed in our systems. I use that all the time. That's an application that does not get updated automatically. It's not part of the apps that AutoMox will automatically update. I'll have to double check and verify that because I do know that they are continuing to update the list of apps that they automatically update.
Actually, now that you bring that up, I did get an email from AutoMox regarding the Google vulnerability saying that we needed to patch.
That happens automatically, so we don't have to worry too much about that.
Yeah, but so, what I'm saying is that, you know, it just notified us to do that.
Well, but that's a separate issue. So what I'm looking at is, what apps automatically get updated? What apps do I have to manually update myself? Meaning I got to go into AutoMox and manually upload the patch or the new version and then update the laptops through AutoMox, right? So PuTTY is one of those applications. It's not going to get automatically updated. I have to manually do that. And that's the concern here is if we're not double checking and verifying, then those apps will never get patched. So if you're going to say, well, we're fully patched, no, you're partially patched because your OS is patched, some of your applications may be patched, but not all. So we need to go back, or I need to go back and double check and verify which apps get automatically updated and then make sure I'm updating the ones that do not, like PuTTY. So let's look at our overall big picture here. How are we doing overall in terms of security? And I will say that even though we're not patching all of our apps, we get the OS and the Microsoft side of things and some other third-party apps, like Chrome is automatically going to be patched. That's awesome, right? So in terms of patching, we're not doing too bad. I still need to go back and take care of things like PuTTY, but overall, I think that our patching process is way better than it used to be.
But isn't that where the application allow helps?
No.
No?
So forget about the application allowance.
No, I'm just saying it, you know, if it's not patched, but then we have that one, you know, to where it's not allowed, no. Let's say. Okay.
That's a totally, remember, we're doing it by directory. So if the application's in the right directory.
Then it doesn't matter. Then you do need to have it patched. I'm sorry. I was thinking about something.
So let's look at our overall security here. How would I rate us overall? And I would say that we are doing amazingly well. Because if you look at all of this as a, how would I put this, all together, combination of things that we have, defense in depth, meaning that we're using layered security, patching, 2FA, application allow listing, all of that together makes awesome security. Individually, you might say, oh, it's okay. All together, it's awesome security. We're preventing hackers from getting access to our cloud stuff with two-factor authentication. We are doing much better with malware protection because we have application allow listing, most likely the malware will never run. And then we're doing pretty good with the patching because we have OS patching taken care of, Microsoft apps are taken care of, some third-party apps like Chrome is already taken care of. And then I just have to worry about those little apps out there like PuTTY that needs to be patched. Now, the reason why I say that our patching is pretty good is because it's part of the bigger picture. It's part of that, you know, those other security features we have, you know, 2FA and application allow listing. So if an attacker wants to try to send us malware that takes advantage of a vulnerability in something, well, most likely it's never going to run. So even though I'm a little behind on the patching side of things, which I need to fix, allow listing helps prevent somebody from taking advantage of vulnerabilities in an unpatched system because the malware will never run.
And that's what I was asking.
So those are some things that I look at and say we're doing very well for ourselves and much better than even some organizations I used to work for who were trying to do security because we have this combination of things and that's awesome. Other things that we need to think about though, and this is something that you kind of hinted at in one of our previous episodes where I think I was talking about application allow. I think it was the application allow listing episode. I can't remember now, but you brought up something about logging in as admin and you said something about don't do that, right? Because when you log in as an administrator and you download the malware runs as administrator versus me logging in as a regular user, the malware that we download is only going to run as a regular user. So even if you don't have application allow listing, which we do have, log in as a regular user. Even if you're in IT, log in as a regular user. Because then if you do download something that does try to execute, and let's say, it does execute, it's going to run as a regular user. It's not going to have keys to everything. It's only going to have the keys that you have. So it may do some damage, but it's not going to be catastrophic damage because you're not letting them run as administrator. And maybe it can't do anything because it's not administrator. So those are some things to think about, that there's other little things you can do. And I used to work for an organization that had everybody logging in as admin. Terrible idea. And I used to work for another organization that had IT logging in as a regular user. And then anytime we needed to do admin things, we had a separate account for that. And we would log in as an administrator to do that work. So that prevented somebody from sending us malware, having that malware run as potentially domain admin, because we had domain admin rights in that particular environment, and then having keys to every single thing on the network, right? Domain admin to all the servers. You don't want that. So that's huge. That's a big deal. Do not log in as root. Do not log in as admin. Have a separate account for that. And that's the account that you're going to check your email with, type up your documentation with, and then when you need to do admin things, you log in as admin. And we do that for ourselves. We have separate accounts. Now, we also have Windows Defender. And Windows Defender is supposed to be pretty good. And we do a couple things. I think I have a policy in Intune that sets up some security for Windows and Windows Defender. I also have a policy in, or I should say, a configuration in AutoMox to patch Windows Defender every day. Because Windows Defender sometimes will get updates out of the normal updates that you get for the Windows operating system, outside of Patch Tuesday. And I think a lot of these are minor things, plus the definitions. So, you know, the signatures for the new viruses that are out there and whatever else it needs to have, those may happen every day, and you want to make sure you get those. So I see these emails come in every day about my laptop getting patched for Windows Defender, right? So that's awesome. And these are two things that I think are also greatly improving our overall security. But we had those implemented a long time ago. And I don't necessarily put them on the list because the short list was sort of generated out of those things that I thought were huge, big. Now, I will say that logging in as administrator is a big deal. So that might be something you want to add to the short list for your own organization if you're trying to implement better security. Do not have regular users logging in as administrators, and then make sure you have things like Windows Defender in there. And for a lot of organizations, Windows Defender is just fine. So let's summarize here. For patching, I need to work on third-party applications like PuTTY, but overall, we're doing really well there. 2FA, very simple. It's on for the system or accounts that we feel are super important, the Microsoft 365 and LastPass. And then for application allow listing, we're doing directory-based. That's awesome for us because it minimizes the chance that any malware is going to run on our system. And then not logging in as admin is a big deal. Windows Defender, making sure that's patched all the time. And then, of course, I have down here patching third-party applications, which I just talked about. So while there are things I think, you know, if this is new to you, you're going to have to do some homework on this because we're not giving you all the necessary details to implement this in your particular organization with the things that you may have. But this is a short list of things that I think are going to have a huge impact to your overall security and make things much better, especially if you don't
have them. Yeah, they can be on your list for you to implement them in a way that works for what you have. And one of the things that I kind of want to stress, at work, I use my passwords and, you know, it's really frustrating when they have you change the password or whatever. But when we do our work here, I really don't mind having the 2FA. I really don't mind being asked to elevate to admin, to my admin user when it's something that, you know, it needs to be done by an administrator, because I'm learning the difference between what a regular user should do versus their responsibilities of an administrative user. So to me, I think that's been very valuable, and it's not something that I resent anymore. You know, it's not instant gratification, like most people really like it, but what do you really want to have? Instant gratification and a hacker in your network, or, you know, have a little bit, an additional task to do or an additional step and have your network secure and peace of mind?
Yeah, and one of the things I think is really important to understand here is that the challenge for me in all of this is figuring out ways to take this knowledge I have and bring it out of the classroom, bring it out of the video, bring it out of the book, and into the real world, and applying all of this. And I'm not entirely sure why this took so long for me to do. I think part of the issue I had is that I was stuck on certain things and thought, oh, gotta have this, gotta have that. But at the end of the day, when you break things down into small chunks like this, and you say, okay, I'm gonna do, patching. We're gonna start with that and try to get that as good as we can. Doesn't mean it has to be perfect, but at least do something with that. Right. And you can, if you have Intune, you can do some patching out of Intune. In fact, you might be able to do all of it. It depends on your particular organization and how you do things. So take a look at that, but do something with that. And then when it comes to two-factor authentication, that's an easy one, right? Make sure that your end users have that second factor, help them get things registered. Because if you're doing like the Microsoft one, you have to register the phone, but do it. That's going to be huge. And then with application allow listing, that's also, for me, it was kind of this thing that I wasn't too sure about. But now that I've done it and done it through Intune in terms of pushing out the settings, that's awesome. And combined, those three things combined is huge. I mean, that's really going to make it hard for anybody to try to break in. Even if you are really, really good, you're going to have some work to do.
I think the difference between then and now is the project management that you're doing. I think it really does help for you not to miss things and to actually figure out a process when you're sitting down and say, you know, this is what I'm doing. You know, I'm doing 2FA. You know, where do I have to do it? What do I have to do? What are the steps? And bringing out the task and the duties and adding them as needed, as when you're doing your research and all of a sudden you realize, I need to do one more step, and you put it in. It's easier to muddle through that versus the chaos we used to have. It's like, okay, let's start the project. We did the research. We jumped in, but there was no order to the method. There was just madness and chaos. And now I think it's, you know, the fact that you're breaking the projects into bite-sized pieces, it makes it a lot easier for me to learn, as well as I have seen you get the projects off the ground a lot quicker because of how you did the project management. So I think that's a difference.
Yeah, that's a big difference, I think, in terms of how we manage things and how we move forward with things. And yeah, in the past, simple little projects took forever, and sometimes they never got done because I didn't have a process to any of that. So that's a big help. But one thing that I want to sort of mention here is, if you are doing these things, let us know how you did this. You know, what are some of the things on your short list? How did you implement them? What did you do to get this to function in your organization? If you're having issues trying to implement these things, what are your issues? Do you have questions? If you haven't done these things, why haven't you? If you would like to do these things and you need help, send us an email. Let us know. And we will try to see if we can help you, you know, move in the right direction with one of these things, because you got to start somewhere. Yeah, but I think that's it for now. If you have any comments or questions, you can send us an email at support@section9.us. If you want to take a look at our show notes, I will have some links in there. You can check that out on our website. And if you haven't subscribed, please do so. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.